Hey, this is Kyle Eidelman from Southeast Christian Church, and I want to thank you for listening to the message today. As we open up the scriptures together, I pray that this message inspires you, challenges you, and is the right word at just the right time in your life. Enjoy the message.
On the Friday before Christmas, my wife sent me to the grocery store with a list. It was bitter cold outside, if you remember that Friday. The store was crazy, lots of people getting last-minute supplies for the holidays and trying to beat the weather. I quickly grabbed a cart and realized that we were loosely observing traffic laws as a way to navigate our way around Kroger. A little bit of road rage here and there, like you don't get to stop and look and decide what you want. If you don't know what you want, you keep moving, make another lap and come around a second time. I had a list of things, some of them seemed pretty easy. Toothpaste. Have you been to the toothpaste aisle lately? Like Crest, just Crest toothpaste. I counted over 20 varieties of Crest toothpaste. And the specific one I was looking for was 3D white whitening therapy toothpaste charcoal. Like that was the kind stored at the bottom. Don't get me started on the cheese section. Like plethora of cheeses. I Googled it. There are more than 1,800 cheese options available to you these days. Lots of cheese choices. And pain medicine. Like if you have a cold and you go to the store to get cold medicine, even if you know what kind of brand you want, it's hard to know like which one is right for you. There's all kinds of options, and there's regular strength and severe and extreme, and there's extra strength and maximum strength. And I thought, well, maximum strength is what I want because maximum would indicate the most. But then in my mind, I'm like, well, what if extra is maximum with a little extra? Like I didn't know which one of them would fit. And I don't understand why things like regular strength would even be an option. Like why? What psychopath, when they feel sick, buys regular strength cold medicine? That's a red flag. The only purpose of regular strength is to make maximum strength look good, in my opinion. Like regular strength is the unattractive friend of maximum strength. It just makes people want maximum strength more. If you were in a dating scene and you date somebody and you like see that they have regular strength cold medicine, it's a red flag. You need to get away from that person. I don't understand why you would ever choose it. And so there's all kinds of choices and options. And we like that, although I think it tends to create some anxiety. It tends to create some crisis for us. We don't know which one to choose. So we want the choices, but we don't know which one to go with. Just seems that it would help if things were a bit simpler. But in our minds, more is always better than enough. More choices certainly seems like a positive thing. I mean, whether that is the menu at Cheesecake Factory or whether it's our calendars, deciding what we're gonna spend our day doing, like we wanna have options, we wanna have choices. We talked about this last week, but there's this idea in psychology. It's called the complexity bias. And it can be defined this way. Complexity bias is a logical fallacy that leads us to give undue credence to complex concepts. That there's something within our human nature that is drawn to that which is complex. That things that are new and more complicated, we tend to be drawn to rather than things that might be simple or have been around for a while. And so in this series, to start off the year, we're just calling this three-week series Simple, and we're looking at some of the simple teachings of Jesus, things that have the power to give us a firm foundation for our lives. They're simple, but they're not necessarily easy. And we have to set aside a bit of our complexity bias in order to embrace these teachings. And so what I want to do specifically for you as we begin 2023 is look at some simple teachings of Jesus as it relates to your schedule, to your calendar, to how you spend your time and to what you give your attention. So we're going to be in Luke chapter 10. If you have your Bible, if you have a Bible app, open it to Luke chapter 10. We read a very simple story here where Jesus commends someone who is intentional at giving their time and attention to him and to being in his presence. So Luke chapter 10, here's the scene. Jesus and his disciples are in a town called Bethany. It's just a few miles outside of Jerusalem. And they decide they're gonna stop by and visit some, what appears to be pretty close friends of Jesus. This is Lazarus and his sisters, Mary and Martha. We don't know the birth order of these siblings, although as you read the story, I think you get some idea of what it might have been. I'm thinking Martha was the oldest. She's got some of that firstborn energy. We'll see. Mary seems like more of a middle child as we read the story. And Lazarus, I think, was probably the younger brother. I think their parents, you know, couldn't agree on an M name for boy. And so it's Mary, Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. And they stop by the house right outside of Jerusalem. And here's how it begins, verse 38. Jesus and his disciples were on their way, and he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. How did she know they were coming? Well, she probably didn't. So Jesus likely is stopping by their home unannounced with at least 12 disciples, but likely more. There were probably more than just the 12 that were traveling with him at this time. And so they stop by the house, and suddenly Martha knows there are a lot of things that need to happen, things that need to get done, and they need to get done quickly. I mean, how would you feel if right now you found out that Jesus and about 20 other people were gonna come over to your house today and hang out? Like, you would immediately be aware of everything that needs to happen and what preparations need to be made. Lots of responsibilities. And so Martha was feeling it, that firstborn energy. Verse 39. So she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. So Jesus comes by with the disciples and is teaching. He's a rabbi. Mary comes in, sits down at his feet, crisscross applesauce, full attention to Jesus. Martha's in the kitchen working, giving her attention to the preparations and responsibilities. But Mary's at the feet of Jesus. Now, don't miss the significance of this in Luke's gospel. To say that a woman was sitting at the feet of a rabbi would have been culturally unheard of. Jesus, as a rabbi, allowing her to sit at his feet is accepting, even inviting her to be one of his students or an ambassador, somebody that he's preparing to carry on his ministry, his mission, his message. And so it would have been uncomfortable for people in the room who didn't grow up that way. Like, probably for the 12 disciples, like, seeing Mary at the feet of Jesus as a rabbi, like, that's not their tradition. That wasn't their religious practice. So they probably would have been a little bit uncomfortable. But Jesus welcomes this. Like, he doesn't say to Mary, Mary, what are you doing? You need to go in there. You need to help your sister. Call us when it's ready. Like, that is not the conversation. He seems to not just welcome her, but want her there. And so verse 40 says, but Martha was distracted by all the preparations that needed to happen, everything that had to take place. So Martha is giving her attention to all the stuff and things that need to be done so that Jesus and his disciples can feel welcomed, so that she can be hospitable to them. The question is, why is she doing it? Is she doing it for them? Is this an act of worship? Or is she doing this out of some concern of what they might think if she doesn't? If her house isn't in good condition, if food isn't ready, like, what's the motivation for what she's doing? Because I think for a lot of us that kind of get caught up in the Martha spirit, we're driven by this fear of what other people think, that's what drives us. That's what gets us out of bed and keeps us going, is we want to appear to have everything in order. We don't want to drop any of our responsibilities. We're afraid of what people might think if we don't do it. This past week, I had a couple of days in Atlanta where I was at the Passion Conference there and was worshiping with about 20,000 18 to 24-year-olds. It was unbelievable. I got into my rental car at the Atlanta airport, though, to head over to the stadium where this was. And when I got in the rental car, I was almost knocked over by the smell of weed in my rental car. I mean, it was bad. Like, it was so bad, I was afraid it might be good, you know? Like, I was concerned, like, what kind of impact is this gonna have on me? And I was sure the smell was gonna beyond me. I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm gonna be backstage with these speakers and worship leaders, and I'm just gonna walk in smelling like weed from my rental car. I changed my shirt, I squirted on some cologne, which I don't think helps, didn't seem to work. But the whole time I'm back there, I'm just keeping my distance from people, right? Like I don't want them to get too close because I'm concerned about what they might think. I try to stay busy doing other things and just have some short conversations because I'm concerned about what they might see or what they might smell, right? Like, so I'm constantly aware of what other people might see and how they might interpret it. And I think for many of us, like, this is how we live our lives. This is the filter through which we see every connection and relationship, and this hyper-awareness, this fear of what other people might think, what they might see, what they might say when we're not around. And that oftentimes ends up driving some good things, but we're not doing them for good reasons. We're doing them out of fear of what other people will say and think. And now, I think that's part of what Martha was concerned about. Like, well, if I don't do this, what are people gonna say about me? What kind of host will I have been? And so she is prioritizing preparations and productions. Mary is prioritizing connection and being present. She's being present with Jesus. It's easy, I think, when we read the story now to be critical of Martha, but I want you to think through that she's not doing anything bad. In fact, what she's doing is good. She is serving, she's being hospitable. It's not that Jesus is teaching in her family room and she is in the kitchen, you know, scrolling through Instagram, right? That's not the scene here. It's not that Jesus is teaching and she's gone back to her bedroom, shut the door because she's not done binge watching Yellowstone. Like, it's not what's happening. Like, it's not that she's choosing something that is bad or neutral. And I mean, what she's doing is good, but it's not what's best. There's something better that needs to have her attention. And so the word the Bible uses here to describe what she's doing, did you catch the word? It's the word distractions. Distractions, sometimes good things, when they're chosen over better things, can be a distraction. And so Martha is distracted by all of these things that in their right place are good and worthwhile, they're spiritual gifts. But she's missing out on the presence of Jesus, which should matter more than anything else. A number of years ago, I went with Matt Reagan and a number of pastors to one of our food kitchens that we support as a church to serve lunch to the homeless and to volunteer however we could. And we get there and there's some pallets that needed to be unloaded, unpacked, and organized. And so we got to work and I look around and notice that Reagan's disappeared. Like, I don't see him. And Reagan, he works as hard as anybody. He's not lazy, but I'm like, where's he at? Why are we unloading these things without him? And where's he at? And then it's time to go feed the homeless people, so they need us in the serving line. And, you know, I put on my apron and my hairnet, and that's not true, I didn't wear a hairnet. And start slinging spaghetti. Like, I'm slinging spaghetti as people walk through, and I'm like, where's Reagan? These green beans aren't gonna serve themselves. Like, where's he at? And I look up, and I kind of see through the crowd of people. I can see him towards the back of where people are eating, and he's sitting at a table with a homeless person, talking to this person while that person is eating. And my first thought when I saw that, first thought was, hey, Mary, how about you come up here with the rest of us, right? Like, my first thought. And I think we can have this Martha spirit about us where we miss the point of some of the things we're called to do as believers, some of the significant connections that we are meant to have because we're too busy focused on our to-do list, focus on a checklist. And one of the ways you know you have a Martha spirit is not just that you do those things, but you resent the people who don't. You resent them for not doing what you're doing. And so there's some of this that starts to play out here as we read the story. Martha's annoyed with her sister, and then she seems a little bit annoyed with Jesus. So verse 40, she came to Jesus and asked, Lord, don't you care? Don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Lord, don't you care? Don't you see everything that I'm doing? Don't you see the way I'm being responsible? Can you just tell my sister that she needs to do what I'm doing? And she's assuming that Jesus is on her side. Be really careful with such an assumption. When there's some kind of conflict and you just assume that Jesus is on your side, be careful, because Jesus is on Jesus' side, right? Like that's how that works. And so verse 41 and 42, here's how Jesus responds. Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Martha, I think he was gentle and tender. He might have had a slight smile. Hey, you're worried and upset about all kinds of things, but your sister has chosen the one thing that is most important. It's not going to be taken away from her. There are three adjectives in this text that are used to describe Martha. She's distracted, she's worried, she's upset. She's distracted, she's worried, she's upset. The word upset also could be translated as easily annoyed, easily bothered. So I just want you to take a look at your life and ask if perhaps these three words describe you. Distracted, are you listening? Distracted, worried, or upset. Fighting a little bit of a cold. Should have got maximum strength. Excuse me. See, I think I think these are the words that maybe we wouldn't use to describe ourselves, but maybe a lot of the people that we do life with would use these words to describe us. I think these words tend to describe our culture. We live in an age of distraction. People are anxious, easily annoyed. I think we can agree on that. And what I would argue is that these things are the fruit of complexity. These are the fruits that grow on the tree of busyness and complexity. So just kind of play this out with me. Like, we live in a world that gives us all kinds of access to entertainment. Never had more entertainment options than we do these days. It's on demand, as much as we could possibly want, and yet we are strangely distracted. All kinds of things available to take our attention, but it's left us more distracted than ever. Or we have access to information in ways that we never would have imagined. If you take all the information from the beginning of time until 2003 and put that together, we produce more content in 2 days now than we do during all of that time combined. And yet, with all of this information and all kinds of answers available to us, we seem to be more anxious than ever, meaning that we seem to be more aware than ever that there aren't adequate answers to the struggles and the challenges that we're experiencing. Or we've never been more connected. Technology and social media link us together in ways that it's very complicated, right? Whether it's people in our neighborhood or with people around the world, and yet we are strangely very disconnected. It's left us very divided. We are more upset by one another, more easily annoyed and frustrated with one another than ever before. So Jesus says to Martha, one thing is needed. And I just love the simplicity of his answer. There's one thing that's really necessary here. Like, what you're doing is good, but there's one thing that's always gonna be better, and that's spending time with me. It's practicing the presence of Jesus in our lives. It's always better. And Jesus just says it very simply, but there's part of me that is like, well, don't you wanna say more than that? No. No, this is the one thing that is most important. As you plan your days and you put together your calendar and you think through your schedule and you decide what's gonna get your attention and what isn't, this is the one thing that is best, spending time with Jesus. And so from this text, there are just a couple of very practical ways that we can apply it, I believe, ways that we can take these words and build our house on the foundation. Here's the first challenge for you, 2023, is eliminate some distractions. Eliminate. Don't just be aware of distractions, but eliminate them. Simplicity requires cutting and eliminating unnecessary and even secondary distractions. Meaning, it's not just about repenting of sin and eliminating things that are wrong or evil. It's about recognizing that some things aren't wrong or evil, but they are very distracting. They are secondary. And unless we do something about it, it makes it very difficult to give our attention to Jesus, to sit at the feet of Jesus. And there are a lot of different distractions we could talk through, but all of them together would come into a distant second to our screens. Right? Like, I could give you a lot of statistics on this, but your device tells the story. If you'll check your screen time, I know it's hard to do. It's a little bit like checking the scale. Like, we know it's there, but we really don't want to hear what it has to say. And that if you check it, it'll tell you some truths about how much time maybe you really do have to sit at the feet of Jesus. Microsoft researcher Linda Stone said, "Continuous partial attention is our new normal." Just think about that for a moment. Like, this is the way we now interact with one another. That we give people partial attention. And if we have a meeting, I'm checking messages, I might look at my phone, and you don't really notice it because that's what we do now. And we can both be talking to one another and both be on our phones at different times, depending on what we have going. Like, we're just used to it. This continuous partial attention is our new normal, and we've carried this into our spiritual practices, that this is what God tends to get from us, this partial attention. I'm here, but not really. While I'm having this time with you, like, this is where some of you are at right now. Like, you're kind of listening, but you're also thinking about everything else that's going on today and checking your phone throughout the service and partial attention. And I've recognized this in my own life. Recently, I was at the LaGrange campus worshiping with my family. And while I was there, we had communion time. And during communion, you know, my process went something like this. I was praying, communion in my hand. Lord, I just want to take a minute here. I just want to thank you for your sacrifice. Thank you for dying on the cross so that my sins could be forgiven. I love you. There is nothing that means more to me than my relationship with you. I'm sorry for missing some of our time together this past week. And then there was something about the word missing that connected my brain to trash day from a few days earlier. I had missed trash day, and without doing it on purpose, my thought process shifted to, I don't understand why the people who pick up trash can't come at a more consistent time every week. I feel like I put it out at the same time, but they pick it up at different times. And I don't think I was late this time. I just think they're inconsistent. And maybe I need to put it out the night before. But if I put it out the night before, I'm going to have to schedule that on my phone, pull out the phone. And then, maybe it's an updated payment method that's an issue. Maybe it's just time for me to update my credit card information. And that reminds me about my driver's license that I need to get updated. And if I could probably do that on Wednesday, even though it's a study day for me, and I'm going to be working on my sermon about overcoming distractions. Like, my brain is off, and then I kind of come back to reality when my wife gently nudges me because I've got my phone out and making appointments. And when I say gently nudge, I mean like this painful pinch on the underside of my thigh, right? That says, put your phone up, it's communion time. And I wasn't doing it on purpose, didn't even realize it. But then in that moment, I look up and I see this image. I've got my phone in my right hand and I've got communion in my left. And in some ways, this will tell the story of our year. Like, what we give attention to, is it to what matters most? Or are we just in a constant state of distraction? I think the challenge, even now as I talk through these things, I think the challenge for a lot of us is we are distracted about our distractions by our distractions. Like, it's difficult for us to even recognize our distraction because of all the distractions that are distracting us. And so we have to intentionally eliminate distractions so that we can give our heart to what matters most. Secondly, prioritize connection, or maybe I would say schedule connection. Our tendency when we're planning our days is to schedule responsibilities and then try to fit in relationships, whether that's with others or with Jesus. We try to kind of fit those in as we can. But the problem is that complexity is always telling us, you just add one more thing and it doesn't make that much difference. There's always room for one more thing. That's not how it works. So at the end of the year, I went with my 18-year-old son to the gym, and I was spotting him while he was bench pressing. And you know, he was feeling pretty good, added some weight, drank his Bang. He was deciding to go for his PR, his personal record, right? And so I said, how much weight do you want to add? And he's like, two and a half pounds on each side. 5 pounds? Really? It's like the size of a baby kitten. It's like putting a baby kitten on the bar. Like, but we do that, 2.5 pounds on each side. He gets it down to his chest, starts to push up. Can't get it past about here. I'm like, it's a baby kitten. Come on, you got this. You can. They just couldn't quite get it. I should point out that a few days later, he did get it when his girlfriend was spotting him. I don't think that's coincidence, but couldn't quite get it. Now, why? It's because there's a cumulative effect, right? You add 2 pounds, and it doesn't seem like very much. You're like, well, I got room for that. I can handle that. But it adds to all the other weight. Everything else feels heavier. And this is what complexity has done to us in our culture, where we add things that don't seem significant. We think, well, I've got room for one more thing, and then something significant happens and we just can't do it. And we're like, well, what happened? I just added a baby kitten. Like, how, that's not that much. But there's this cumulative effect to it. And so how do we make sure that we're scheduling what matters most? Meaning that if you have an appointment with God, you keep that appointment. It's 24 hours in a day. Let's say you decide this year you're gonna take the first 24 minutes of every day and you're gonna have a standing appointment with God. You keep stacking things and adding things. What happens typically is that that's the type of thing that gets bumped out. There's not time, too many tasks, too many preparations, too much responsibility that needs to be taken care of. Something that's helped me with this is what's called the Eisenhower decision matrix, and you can Google it later, but it's just a way, kind of the four quadrants to kind of think through your time and your responsibilities and your relationships. And so in one quadrant is the what's important and urgent. If it's important and urgent, that means it needs to happen today. You write down whatever that is as you go through your day, or you look back and you see what you should have put in that quadrant, but it's important, it's urgent, it means you're gonna take care of it today. If it's important but not urgent, then it's something you need to schedule. It means that you're not gonna miss it. It's easy to take things in this quadrant and just put them off. Say, well, it's important, but this week's not a good week, so I'm not gonna worry about church this weekend. Or a date night. I wanna have a date night, but it's important to me, but I don't have to do it today. And so it just ends up not happening at all, right? So you scheduled the things in that quadrant. If it's not important, but it's urgent, then you ask for help for these things. You see if there's some people that you can delegate it to. The fourth one, the one I really wanted to highlight here, is to filter your day through asking, okay, what in my day is not important, nor is it urgent? Because if it's not important and it's not urgent, you know what you do? You don't. Like you delete it. If it's not important and it's not urgent, then don't spend your time doing it. And so you look through your day and you say, okay, how many hours did I spend giving attention and time and effort to things that were neither important nor were they urgent? And I think most of us would be pretty convicted about the fact that we've got some space. We have some time then to sit at the feet of Jesus. And that doesn't, you know, that's a practice. Like anything else, it's practicing the presence of Jesus where you spend a few minutes and then a few more minutes, but it is what's most important. I want to challenge some of you to jump in a group. We're getting ready to kick off groups at church. If you've never been in a group, I'd love to ask you to be in a group. And I know the number one reason you won't do it is I have too much on my plate. I'm just too busy, too much going on over here. What would it look like if you scheduled those connections, connecting with people that'll help you connect to Jesus, connecting with people that'll help you build your house on a firm foundation? If you scheduled that and you tried to find some other things that were not urgent nor important. I'd love to challenge you as we begin this year to make being here a commitment, that you're not gonna just say on the weekend, I'll see how I feel. I mean, if we don't have anything else going on, I know it's important, but it doesn't feel very urgent. So if we don't do it this week, that's fine. We'll do it next week. I wanna just challenge you to see the difference it makes when you show up and you're here with other believers. If it doesn't work on a Sunday, then just say, we're gonna be here on Thursday. We're gonna be here on a Thursday night. We have an incredible worship service on Thursday nights. And if you can't come on the weekend, come on Thursday night, but make it a commitment, make it a priority that you're gonna have these times to just sit at the feet of Jesus. Connection always ends up feeling like something we can catch up on, but it just doesn't seem to happen unless we're intentional to prioritize it and schedule it. That's especially true when it comes to our time with Jesus. In the spring of 2021, there's a video that went viral of a high school student giving his valedictorian speech. His name is Kyle Martin. And he talked about the moment he realized that he was in the running for valedictorian. He decided he was gonna go all in, like he was gonna give this every ounce of effort required in order to win, and he did. And as he's giving the speech, you think he's gonna get to a place in the speech where he says, and it was all worth it, and it all paid off. But that's not what happens. Instead, here's what he says in his speech. He said, it was so good for about 15 seconds. 15 seconds of my heart racing and my adrenaline pumping. 15 seconds of, yeah, I won. 15 seconds of being at the top of the pile for this accomplishment. He said, it felt euphoric, but there must come a 16th second. And on that 16th second, I sat down on my seat and I looked at my silver stole that says valedictorian and I thought, that's it? What just happened? Why am I not feeling anything else? He said, I was shocked and it was a huge problem for me and I needed to figure out why. What he describes there, I think is pretty consistent with what a lot of people in our culture have experienced or are experiencing or one day will. We're pushing and going, accomplishing, succeeding, trying to impress everybody with the house that we've been building. And then there's the 16th second, and you're like, wait, does any of it really matter? Does any of that even last? He says on the 16th second, he started to realize that his great accomplishment was paid for by sacrificing connection with people in his life. Here's how he said it. He said, working hard is good, he said. It is in fact biblical, and it is. But it should not be done for the sole purpose of a goal at the expense of relationship with others. Looking back on this year, I realized that the stress of this year for this goal and a 5-minute speech was paid for with the lack of attending to relationships in my life. Nothing is more important than your healthy relationships, not your goals nor your success. As you live your life on this earth, there's no greater good you can do for a person than to have a kind of relationship with them that allows you to point them to Jesus. And he should be your first relationship that never gets neglected. And so my hope would be that this would be a 16th second for some of you, where you just stop for a moment and you ask yourself some questions about what you're doing and why you're doing it, and have you neglected the one thing that matters more than anything else? Jesus said, she has chosen what matters most and it won't be taken from her. The verb tense, it won't be taken, it's literally, it will never be taken, meaning it will last forever. It's the one thing you can do with your time here on earth that will last for all of eternity. And so Jesus doesn't just want you doing things for him. He doesn't want you doing things for him at the expense of being with him. Or let me just put it very simply. This year, Jesus doesn't want more and more from you. He wants more and more of you. See the difference? I can't help but wonder how the story ends. We're not told how it ends in Scripture. Jesus says to Martha, "You're worried and upset about many things. Mary has chosen what is better," and that's all we really hear. I guess there's part of me that thinks Martha probably went back into the kitchen, kind of shook her head, and went back to work. Somebody's got to do it. But I would love to think that Martha paused and she took off her apron and she found a spot sitting next to her sister and she looked up and she spent time with Jesus. I don't know if that happened or not. I know that's hard to do. It's hard to acknowledge in front of a lot of people who've heard you say, "Here's what is most important. Here's what I'm giving my life." It's hard to say, "I've spent a lot of time and a lot of energy on these things. And while they're important, they're not what's most important. And I'm gonna start making some changes." And that takes some humility, but you won't regret it. Sitting at the feet of Jesus, being with him, is the one thing that will last forever. Let's pray. God, we need your help with this. I know I do. As I prepare for this message, I just recognize the challenge for me, even in preparing this message. Like, I know there were times this week where the preparation of this message took away some of what was most important, some of what should really have my attention. And so I just want to say, Jesus, that nothing matters more to me than you. And I just pray, God, that there'd be some others who would speak this prayer with me right now, that we love you, Jesus. You matter more to us than any relationship, any series on TV, any job or promotion. You matter more to us than any accomplishment or achievement or acquiring something. You matter most. And I long for my life to reflect that. And so I pray that you would allow us to eliminate some distractions and to schedule and prioritize our time with you so that we don't miss this year what really matters, what's more important than anything else. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thanks for listening. If today's message made you realize you need to take your next step with Jesus, we would love to help you with that. You can connect with us on any of our social media platforms throughout the week or visit our website at southeastchristian.org. And if you want to hear more content like this, you can check out our Sermons podcast or our One at a Time podcast. Both can be found everywhere podcasts are available. Have a great week.